Hello and welcome into An Abundance of Not. It is October 8th, 2014. Wade's Friday, the rest of our hump day. Garrett here with Brad and Wade.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
What's going on, fellas?
Not much. How about you?
I'm doing all right. Recovering. Well, not recovering, but had a good birthday weekend, and now it's back to the good old grind of the daily monotony. So
awesome. Mm-hmm. Not for me.
Yeah. Thanks, jerk.
let me rub that in.
Yeah. Hold on. I got some open wounds. Can you throw a little salt in there?
Yeah. Hold on. Let me grab the salt. Okay. So, not at work.
Oh, that feels so. Feel the burn. Feel the burn.
Glad I could share that.
Yeah. So what are you doing not at work?
So it's actually been kind of a busy vacation, which is awesome. So my cousin was over from Australia visiting in a town near us, namely Chicago. So over the weekend,
just a small little town,
just a little town, you know, a little village not too far away from us. Yeah. So we took a road trip up to see her, visited with her for quite a few hours, got to catch up, you know, family chit-chat and whatnot.
Sure.
And then we came home and relaxed for a little bit, and then road trip again down to Daniel Boone National Forest in Kentucky, where we went hiking for a few days.
Nice.
Yeah.
And cousin was involved in that, or that was just the immediate family?
No, just the immediate family for that one. We when we left the cousin in Chicago, she had a flight to catch, continuing her U.S. tour.
Very cool.
So the four of us were in Kentucky doing some backwoods hiking.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah. It's a really cool place down there if you get a chance to visit, or any of our listeners, if you're in the area. It is definitely, primitive hiking. The trails are fairly decently marked, but you need to pay attention. If you're not paying very close attention, some of the trail markings are a little confusing on the maps. They give you distances for some of the spur trails as well. So we looked up one trail that we wanted to do. The map said it was 3/4 of a mile. So we said, you know, hey, this is great. So we trekked off into the woods. Come to find out that just that particular spur was 3/4 of a mile. And the main trail to get to it was 7 miles.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So we're halfway along this trail and the bottom fell out of the clouds.
Nice.
So we're, you know, 3 miles backwoods, middle of nowhere, huddling under a rock overhang trying to get our ponchos out of our backpacks because it is literally pouring.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm just jonesing to go now. Sign me up.
Oh, yeah.
This public a service and that public a service. There you go. Public service announcement.
But he's not even drinking.
No, I'm not. I'm behaving myself.
You know, it's one of those things, though. It's about the entire experience. Normally, I wouldn't be one to stand out in the rain and get drenched.
Sure.
But there's something about, you know, having a backpack with your survival gear and being out in the middle of the woods. The scenery was absolutely beautiful. The company was awesome. And it just, you know, the rain, who cares?
Yeah, I mean, as long as you got nothing you're worried about losing or getting damaged by the water, then it's not really a concern. And as long as you're not freezing to death as it is and the rain's making it worse, then what's a little water?
Exactly.
Very cool.
So I'm thinking of taking a hiking trail this weekend, well, at least my weekend. There's tons of, there's two, I guess, wilderness parks out near us here, and there's one I've been meaning to go to. I was like, you know what? I would do that today.
Make sure you take gear.
Well, it's not like a...
It's a little day hike.
Yeah, it's not.
Okay.
Not like you're going to pitch a tent somewhere.
Well, no, not even to pitch a tent, but, you know, it's one of those things. It's always better to take water and some snacks with you and not get caught than to, you know, really get in trouble and need them and have nothing with you.
Well, the funny thing is that the trail beginning is, like, right next to a Ralph's, so it's, like, covered.
Yep.
How convenient.
Yeah.
I would recommend sunscreen, because even though it is October, we're having some pretty hot days.
Oh, God, I got
home. It was almost 100 degrees on Monday.
Now, I got home one day, and just before turning off the car, the thermometer said 100 degrees. I was like, damn.
Yeah, it's been hot.
What's that, California? No rain?
Well, it's, you know. But October, you expect it to start cooling off a bit.
Sure.
So, anyway.
So, as I understand, this past weekend there was a special day.
My birthday was this past weekend.
Yeah, that's
my,
the one.
My name day, as certain your circles name may claim it.
And how was your name day?
My name day was not bad, actually. I looked at a couple open houses, or not really open houses, but available houses, since we are on the official house hunt this time.
Woo!
And went out to dinner with Wade and the immediate family. Got some sushi.
Always. Because apparently I'm not part of the immediate family.
Well, you're I didn't want to exclude you by seeming vague.
Ah.
I was trying to express that you were included specifically.
Okay, now I feel better.
There you go. Of which, yes, sushi and sake were consumed.
I confirm he is not drinking.
And Wade had sake, or sake, depending on your level of Asian-dom, in which case we are not. Wade, what did you think of your sake experience?
It was good in the beginning. turned out to be kind of a slug through the rest.
It was like an ounce.
Apparently I'm not very good at sake. Or sake. Whichever one you want.
Okay.
Hey, at least I tried it.
I didn't even force you. You were just
stealing my
good stuff. Then Sunday I met up with some friends at the bar that I shoot pool out of. Hung out there and then met up with one of my other friends at her place. She couldn't get out because she couldn't find a sitter for her kid. And I decided to take Monday off as a recovery/lounge day from work. So I pretty much did nothing Monday. It was great. Sadly, there were no good movies that came out this past week, as we addressed last week's episode. So movies were not experienced, per se. What, did we watch something? What did we watch?
Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
We did. We watched Secret Life of Walter Mitty, the Ben Stiller movie, and that's actually worth watching. It was actually decent.
Oh, God, yeah. The longboard scene, that was just scenery. It was beautiful.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
I mean, it was in Iceland. People are thinking, you know, kind of weird for me to be thinking or talking about scenery, but it was a beautiful place. No,
Iceland's a gorgeous place, yeah. Anyway, if you haven't gotten to see that, go check it out. We thought it was good.
Wasn't Lord of the Rings were there, or was that New Zealand?
That was New Zealand.
New Zealand, okay.
Lord of the Rings is New Zealand, but Game of Thrones films in Iceland.
There we go.
So, you know, there's that.
So, yeah, if you've been watching Game of Thrones, you know exactly how beautiful that landscape is when they don't have the Sect of the Seven blocking it.
There you go.
They don't film the Sept of the Seven in Iceland. They film the Night's Watch in Iceland. Because it's cold. And snowy. And icy.
The point still stands.
And cold.
And cold.
And cold.
And apparently there's a giant wall of ice. No.
No, that's computer generated.
Yeah, there's a 700-foot high wall of ice.
That's right.
That dwarfs like to pee off of.
Anyway, anything else? I think that about does it.
Almost destroyed the back end of a Corolla the other day.
So apparently Wade's reckless endangerment in the roadways.
I wasn't reckless endangerment. The guy pulled in front of me damn near close to a stoplight that was red. It hit the brakes. He knew he was in the wrong because then when the light turned green, he bolted. I'm talking like 80 off the bat bolted.
Good for him. Anyway, let's jump into some movies. So, coming out this week, now I have to make a public apology. I had very extensive notes and life got in the way today, so I'll be doing the best that I can with what I have. But coming out this week, Dracula Untold, a lot of people looking forward to this. Unfortunately, the critics did not love it. This is rated PG-13, and it has got a critic rating of 29%.
Ouch.
Not the highest. Although I think last time I saw it, critics gave it a 14%, so it's coming up. But, apparently the critics aren't loving it. Also coming out this week is The Judge. This is the Robert Downey Jr. movie and the Robert Duvall. And this has got a critic rating of 44%, so a little bit more promising. This is rated R, I'm assuming, for language, since there's not a lot of special effects and doesn't appear to be that much gore in this movie. It's about a father who's a judge. Son is a successful lawyer in a big city. He comes back to visit home, and apparently some family issues reemerge. Additionally, we have Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day. This is a Disney movie at 56% critic rating. This did have a 70% rating yesterday, so it's coming down. It is rated PG, I believe, for... could be PG-13, but I'm pretty sure it's PG, as it's a Disney title and a family-oriented film, following a 11-year-old and pretty much going through the worst day of his life and his family's life. So, sure, rush out to the theaters and see that. Finally, a movie titled Addicted. There's no critic rating. This appears to be a fairly independent film, so I'm not sure what its release schedule looks like. But it's a movie to try to portray the sexy... It's a sexy, provocative thriller about desire and the dangers of indiscretion. I'm slightly intrigued. It is based on a best-selling novel, so there's that. In the box office this week, we have Gone Girl pulled in $37.5 million. Annabelle, the horror movie that did not have a critic rating, and I think still doesn't, or it's pretty weak, pulled in $37.1 million. The Equalizer pulled in additional $18.8 million, and the Box Trolls at $12.0 million. We do have our list of honorable mentions on the website, but I do not have them here in front of me as those got lost in the shuffle. Not sure if we're going to get to see Dracula. I mean, at a 29% critic rating, I might hold off. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But then we do have movie tickets, so maybe it'll be worth seeing it at no real cost.
I do have some information from the inner circles of my area. They do say Annabelle is pretty bad.
Yeah, it's super low budget. I had that. It is up on the website as far as the budget. Some of the budgets from last week's movies that weren't published are up to date now. But yeah, I think it was only like a $5 million budget movie or something really, really cheap. So
it's just one of those horror movies they pop out for October.
Something. But I mean, it pulled in almost $40 million. So, I mean, I'm sure it's going to do okay from the profitability standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But with that, with the end of movies, let's jump into some news.
News out from our beloved friends at Apple. In follow-up to their recent release of HealthKit and the companion health app that is going to collect everybody's personal health data and store it in a single central place for ease of access and use, obviously there are certain concerns about that. Those were addressed in a recent update to Apple's developer agreement. The end-user license agreement that developers have to sign to be able to use Apple's software to program on iOS has been updated to say that anybody that uses HealthKit is not allowed to sell end-user health information that has been collected through HealthKit for advertising to data brokers, information resellers, etc. There is one exception to this, and it is allowed to be shared. It does not say sell or not. It says it can be shared with third parties for medical research purposes, but only if they have the user's consent.
That's interesting. I mean, it's kind of nice if they show that someone's health information is an indicator of something, or whether it's diabetes or even whether it's a mental situation, that they don't get spammed with antidepressants or whatever.
Do you have arthritis?
Exactly.
Do you need anti-pain medication?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's give people the... I mean, that's always the big gamble with a lot of this technology, I think, these days, if you read between the lines, is that, yeah, it's all fine and good. You can use these apps or this, you know, this bit or that bit to understand your body and how it's working. But when it becomes, you know, an access to your life for other people or companies to exploit, that definitely is a problem.
Apple's original vision for HealthKit was that you will eventually be able to share your ongoing health data directly with your doctor. And that would assuming that that's where that exception clause came in, that you can share it for medical research, but it still does require your consent. I don't know how that is supposed to be manifested on the interface, whether that's in the fine print when you first install a HealthKit-enabled app, or if when that feature is enabled, you know, there will be a dialogue on the screen, kind of like there is right now with accessing your camera or your microphone, where it comes up and prompts you, do you want to allow this? So that's still to be determined, but some protections are being put in place for it.
But up to date right now, the HealthKit hasn't gone live to the consumer base, has it? It's still part of the iOS that hasn't been released?
No, it has been released. Okay. That was enabled in 8.0.2.
Okay.
The most recent update, they had some issues with it. And so apps are available now that do take advantage of it. Interestingly, some of the launch partners, for lack of a better term, the apps that were mentioned on stage, still have not updated, Fitbit being one noticeable one that they have not updated yet, even though they were mentioned on stage months ago.
Fitbit's a pretty popular one, right? Don't they do some of the pedometers and that kind of stuff?
Yes, okay. They do. So they still haven't updated. Meanwhile, some restaurants have even updated to add HealthKit to their menu app so that they can automatically add your nutrition information directly from the menu.
Gotcha. That's pretty cool. For people who are counting calories or mindful of what they're eating, they can now get an assessment, provided the restaurants are being honest about it, or maybe the data they're sharing is minimal, like calorie count or something like that. But at least it's something better than just guessing at some of that stuff.
Yep. I don't know all the details of what it is, but I believe HealthKit supports calories and sodium and fat and sugar.
Cool.
So,
awesome.
It's an interesting developing section of the industry, where you can collectively gather all the health information that you're on your ongoing daily life and bring it all together in a single place to view instead of silos.
It kind of touches back base to last week where we did that sleep study with that app that, you know, taking 1,000 people's data and kind of seeing where different cities benefit or whatnot.
Yep.
Was the grumpiest cities. Or...
Yeah. But I mean, the concept's the same of taking health data, and I'm sure we'll see surveys to where which cities are the healthiest and which are not with some of these apps that people start giving their information to the database.
Sure.
So, very cool. Well, Wade?
Well, speaking of someone that might need medical attention, probably you, after playing the upcoming game, The Evil Within, that just released, well, not just, but released a informational trailer saying just one bullet. This is kind of an informational piece saying that you can use the environment around you. You could either walk into a trap or attract an enemy to a trap, stealth an enemy, but bullets are not your only way of destroying these or taking out these haunted, I guess is what they're calling them in the game. Now, what I'm actually kind of happy about here is that this is kind of more a return to form for horror games, that you're not G.I. Joe blowing everything away, but yet this is also doesn't have the here's a flashlight, you can barely see what's going on in the darkness. It's, well, you see this monstrosity? Good, because this place is lit and it's coming after you.
Yeah, they've got some pretty interesting trailers floating around the internet, too, about people experiencing the game for the first time, and some of the scare factors appear to be pretty intense. So if you're a big fan of horror games...
Oh, I think I'm going to be playing it.
Yeah, and you may want to leave a light on when you go to bed.
Nope. Bring it on.
There you go.
I am looking forward to this, even though I've been hearing that some people are saying it isn't looking too good. It's one YouTuber who actually brought up this video said he saw the haunted and he said that he wanted to vomit. I'm like, good.
Is that wanted to vomit because they were so grotesque?
Yeah.
Or wanted to vomit because they didn't live up to the reputation?
It was because they were so grotesque. And one of them is like a guy, I don't really know how to describe him well, you know, think of him more of a zombie, but gray, with, like, barbed wire in his mouth.
Nice.
Yeah, and I'm really glad it's that, you know, going back and saying that it's... we're going away from the jump scares, the loud noises and things in your face. It's... this thing's real, this thing's coming at you, deal with it.
Yeah, the vibe that I got from the game was that it takes place in like an abandoned mental institution.
It's
and I couldn't figure out if is this a whole city?
Oh yeah.
So from the trailers it looked like just an institution, and I wasn't really sure if this all these things kind of occurred in your main character's mind, like they were all hallucinations, or what was going on, because it wasn't really clear. But hey, if you're a fan of horror movies and games, check it out.
This is actually the first in a long while AAA return to horror. It's kind of going to be an issue because if it doesn't do well, the AAA industry will go, okay, they don't want horror still. It's not doing things. It's like, no, you just did it wrong.
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of horror games for PC, especially on Steam, that a lot of people do play and follow, and there seems to be kind of a cult following. It'd be interesting to see if it gets some decent traction in the main population.
All that is just indie work.
Yep.
So,
yep.
Looking forward to it. Go ahead to see the videos in the show notes so you can go and see if it's your cup of blood. Not cup of tea.
That was kind of a stretch.
Yeah.
I saw what you did there.
Thank you.
Well, if the nightmares keep you up at night and sleeping just isn't for you,
you still need medical attention.
You'll still need medical attention. Use your Apple apps. But if anyone who's had a Red Bull in the last decade, you might be coming into some money.
Awesome.
So we're all familiar about Red Bull's slogan, right?
Wings.
Red Bull gives you wings. Well, we here in Abundance of Not are very sad to inform you that that is, in fact, a big, fat lie.
I don't know. I have been seeing some packages with a Red Bull and wings conjoined. Get the Red Bull, get some wings. Done.
Well, unfortunately, there's no medical proof that ties Red Bull and sprouting feathery appendages.
Because that would make my
disappointed.
Commute a
I'm
lot
devastated.
Easier.
We're sorry. We know that this is a tough pill to swallow. We do. So if you need a minute, we understand.
Please pause, yeah. And back.
And we're back. So the drink company recently agreed to pay their customers $13 million to settle a U.S. class action lawsuit which accused the beverage maker of false advertising. Now, pending a final court approval of the settlement, but anyone who purchased a can and from January 2002 to October 3rd of 2014 is eligible to receive either $10 in cash, that's right, a whole $10, or, wait for it, $15 worth of Red Bull products. And, which I find the most surprising here, no proof of purchase necessary. So it's not like you have to show that, hey, here's my Red Bull receipt from 2009.
Oh, good. So that free Red Bull I got from my boss?
Technically, you could be eligible for a $10 reimbursement.
Or a couple keychains. That's
so in 2013...
Do the keychains have wings?
They do.
Yeah, baby.
In 2013...
So in the end, Red Bull really did give you wings.
Just a can with a couple wings off the side.
I guess, if you want to look at it like that. In which case, they may have a ground to stand on in this lawsuit. Look, we've been giving people wings all along. They're just not their own. It's fine, right? So apparently a Red Bull drinker by the name of Benjamin Carithers, I'm guessing, filed the claim with the U.S. District Court of Southern District of New York, essentially alleging the company of misrepresenting the energy drink and the fact that it portrays the ability to boost performance and reaction time, according to the beverage industry publication. Something like that. Anyway, if you're a Red Bull drinker, you might get 10 bucks to go buy, what is that?
Another Red Bull.
Maybe three more Red Bulls.
Enjoy. Oh, God.
So you're high on that list, right?
I've consumed my fair amount of Red Bulls over the past, 10 years, some of which were given to me by Red Bull distributors in the form of an entire case. It is what it is. I had a Red Bull actually Monday night. So, yeah. It fell just out of the time frame, though. October 3rd was the cutoff. Shucks.
Uh-huh.
Oh, darn.
Oh, darn.
Such a shame.
Back to Brad.
In wireless news, apparently we're on a wireless kick again.
Are we? You are.
Sorry. Apparently I'm on a wireless kick again.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, have either of you guys ever stayed at a hotel and the Wi-Fi is not free and they want to charge you for it?
It's been a while that I've even been in a hotel, and I don't recall.
I'm going to go with nope.
That's perfectly fine. Well, it does happen.
No.
Interestingly, it tends to be inversely relational to the price of the hotel. The cheaper hotels tend to give away internet for free. It's not very good, but it's free. And then as you get to the more premium hotels, they start wanting to charge for accessing the internet through their Wi-Fi network.
If they'll pay for it, charge them.
Yeah, exactly. And if they'll pay more, charge more.
That's right.
Well, Marriott has gotten themselves into a little bit of hot water. The employees of the Marriott Gaylord Opryland Hotel and Convention Center in Nashville.
I beg your pardon?
You heard right.
It's,
okay.
Yes, it's quite a name. It's a decent-sized name.
It's a mouthful.
Yes, it is. The hotel apparently was charging its customers and exhibitors, because they're a convention center as well, between $250 to $1,000 per device to access Marriott's Wi-Fi network.
Okay, wow.
Wow.
Yes. Well, not only wow, technically they're allowed to charge whatever they want. It's their Wi-Fi network.
Sure.
However, while simultaneously charging these exorbitant prices, certain of their employees had also installed devices to intentionally block other Wi-Fi signals.
Okay, elaborate.
So
they're blocking outside sources?
Blocking outside sources, and also, if you came to the hotel, have you guys seen those little cellular Wi-Fi hotspots?
Yeah, where they take the cell phone data and turn it into a access point for other devices.
Exactly.
Yep.
So if you came into the hotel with one of those, it wouldn't work.
I'd be pissed.
Well, not only are customers pissed, it's actually illegal.
I don't know, neutrality and all. It's kind of a gray area, isn't it?
Well, no. So, according to the Communications Act, the FCC says that intentionally blocking a legal signal is illegal.
Okay, then.
Yes. Blocking an illegal signal is illegal?
Blocking a legal signal is illegal.
I didn't catch that. So Wi-Fi is an unlicensed open specification that has been blocked off by the FCC saying, you know, here are the rules to operate within these frequencies, but you don't have to be licensed. Everybody's allowed to do it. So for Marriott to then jam the Wi-Fi signals is against the laws that stipulate the governance of the Wi-Fi frequencies. So, in response, the FCC has levied a fine against Marriott of $600,000.
I mean, it's not really a ton of money in the dollars we talk about, but you know, when you're getting slammed by something, I guess the question is it because the few ruined it for the many? It sounds like, based on your verbiage, that some of this actions was on just employee behavior, not necessarily Marriott code of conduct.
It doesn't say exactly. So what it looks like is, it's after a probe of whether it was an intentional or not. It looks like their Wi-Fi system, it wasn't an additional device installed. Part of their Wi-Fi system had this feature that would essentially prevent other Wi-Fi networks from being turned on inside their space.
Okay.
And so without any additional equipment, it looks like whoever was in charge of running this enabled that feature.
Got it.
And targeted, you know, other Wi-Fi hotspots that were not part of their network and disabled them.
Interesting.
So I don't know if it was an official Marriott policy. Only one particular hotel is named in this. So it may have been an employee being a little overzealous in what they're doing, but it was never, you know, stopped until the FCC got involved.
Sounds like a rogue IT guy who's thinking he's benefiting revenue.
Disgruntled IT guy in financing, putting the decimal in the wrong place?
Yeah. Office Space all over again.
Yeah. Well, in this case, it ends up costing them.
Yep. Well, serves you right, IT guy.
Probably fired now.
That'll be coming out of his paycheck.
Yeah. Yep. Probably. Wade?
Continuing on from, I guess it's kind of my horror side of games for this particular episode. The most recent Aliens game, Alien Isolation. This was the one just after, I cannot remember that one. It was so bad. I can't remember it.
The Extinction? Was
it
Extinction?
Alien Extinction, I think. Yeah.
Something like that.
That horrible, godforsaken mess. Has been released. I'm talking about Isolation now. To some odd mixed scores from game reviewing sites, they seem to be kind of all over the board. I know Metacritic had a score of 80 out of 100. Well, here we have CVG at 8 out of 10. Destructoid gave it an 8.5 out of 10. Eurogamer an 8, Game Informer a 7.5. Then we get to, Game Radar at 4.5 out of 5, and so on and so forth. We do get to a point where we get to Polygon, which is a 6.5 out of 10, and that's not the only one. I mean, there's more on the list that are in the show notes, but the review scores do seem to vary quite frequently, and it's kind of disconcerting, even though from what I saw from other people, they're saying the game is pretty good, but yet the problems levied toward it were justified.
I mean, I've watched a little bit of the gameplay for this, and it's a first-person point of view type of... I'm not even sure if it's action-adventure. From what I saw, it was kind survival of exploration. And you essentially play as Ripley, who was Sigourney Weaver's character in the Alien movies, and are going through the ship and kind of dealing with the aliens as they come, so to speak, from what I saw?
It's actually, from what I saw, was one alien.
Okay.
That actually doesn't just react to scripted events. It will actually react to what the character is doing, and this game is set 15 years after the first movie.
Okay. But somewhere in between the first and the second.
Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, visually it looked interesting. Your level of interactivity with some of the environment seemed hit or miss from the basic, 20, 30 minutes of gameplay that I saw. So,
judging from, I said the people that I've been playing it, they say it looks great. And nonetheless, and I will probably give it a look at before. Well, I won't buy it. I'll look at it, but to see if I want to play it or not, just like anyone should, considering games cost anywhere from $50 to $60 nowadays.
Well, yeah.
Not nowadays, or more. For a while. So,
Or more.
If you do like the Alien series, do your research, as will I. I think you'll know if I decide to play it, if it's up on the channel.
Yep. So keep posted, otherwise do your research.
Yeah.
Well, from being in space to looking at space, a massive new telescope that is planned to be built on the big island of Hawaii is off to a rough start. There's a groundbreaking ceremony and Hawaiian blessing that came to an abrupt end pretty much before it even got underway Tuesday. Yesterday for us, Tuesday for our listeners. Apparently, protesters who oppose the plans to build, which will be one of the world's largest telescopes, which is near the summit of a mountain that's held sacred to native Hawaiians. So apparently the natives are not super stoked on this. Not all of them, anyway. So more than an hour after the event was scheduled to begin near the top of Big Island's Mauna Kea, the host was conducting a live webcast, which hit a snag that caused some serious delays. And those, we found out later, delays were caused by people blocking access to the future telescope site. The groundbreaking event, which was for a $1.4 billion telescope that would measure 30 meters in diameter. I mean, just massive.
That's the scope, people, not mirror. The building.
That's a third of a football field across for this telescope.
It's huge. That's a big mirror.
Yeah. They were showing the groundbreaking ceremony through a webcast, given that access to the telescope site was extremely limited at an elevation of 14,000 foot elevation with what they called Arctic-like conditions. But they say that several dozen protesters, both standing, sitting, and chanting on the road, were preventing a caravan of vans from reaching the summit. The webcast later showed the protesters yelling during attempts to conduct the Hawaiian blessing ceremony. So, kind of an interesting topic. I mean, I work with a native Hawaiian who, from the Hawaiian standpoint, when the U.S. kind of took over the Kingdom of Hawaii, essentially, may not have been conducted with the best tact and definitely kind of left a poor taste in the mouths of a lot of Native Hawaiians, and then you've got something like this. I'm not saying this is government-wise, but if it's kind of stepping on the traditions and whatnot of the Native people there, that's maybe something that needed to be dealt with a little bit more tastefully without knowing the actions that really led up to it.
Well, and that's one of those scenarios where we don't know everything that's involved here. There's certainly a case of you're never going to please everyone.
I agree.
But I think in these scenarios, care, you know, does need to be taken. These people are important, and their feelings are important. I mean, we wouldn't be happy if somebody just decided to build whatever they wanted on a cultural site of significance for us.
Yep, so why is it okay the other way around?
Exactly. Yep. I mean, I understand it's not quite the same, but, you know, if somebody were to come in and decide they wanted to build, I don't know, some kind of factory on the site of the Twin Towers, you know, most Americans would not be okay with that. That's important. So why is it okay that we just get to go in and take other people's sacred sites or significant sites?
Yep, I agree. Now, again, this could have been something that was a votable topic, and
sure,
maybe people were outvoted, or a lot of times...
And
not happy about it. Or a lot of times people that express the biggest concerns after an event don't typically take a lot of action prior to it. So these may be people that never knew or didn't do anything to start with, and now they're trying to prevent it from happening now that it's up to the, you know, down this far in the road.
Sure.
So who knows? I mean, again, like you said, there's a lot more information to know about this. But the fact that they're trying to build a 30-meter telescope is mind-blowing.
Yeah, I don't think we have all the information on it, but I do think that, you know, like I said, culturally significant sites, I think care should be taken in negotiation. It shouldn't just be a, we're going to do what we want, and I hope that's not what happened.
I would agree.
You know, some sensitivity is in order.
Sorry. The only thing that I think of is, was this the only place? I mean, granted, that is a monstrous telescope, but how many other places will there be able to put such a, how do I say this, monstrous mirror?
Yeah. I mean, there's not many. There's, you know, certain atmospheric conditions, and definitely you want to be far enough out of civilization that you don't get light pollution. I mean, a 30-meter mirror in this telescope, that's going to pick up the tiniest pinpoints of light, because that's what you want it to do. But the problem with that is, if you're anywhere close to a terrestrial light source, then that messes with your light collection.
The benefit, though, to building on Hawaii, and especially if it's on the southwestern side of the islands, because of the way they're formed, you have a big mountain right at the middle of the islands, and this is pretty much all of them. And the way the climate conditions are in the Pacific Ocean right there, all the cloud builds up on the northeastern side, and as it builds up and they ascend, you know, following the mountain, they dump all their rain and the clouds dissipate. So when you get to the southwest side, it's clear skies, almost constant. And like Brad said, the terrestrial lights, when you're on an island like Hawaii, any one of the islands, there's only so many cities. And so there's nowhere near the amount of terrestrial light there that you would find. I mean, there's an observatory in L.A. I mean, what kind of light do you think that gets? And there's got a decent one down south from us, Palomar Mountain. And depending on the night, I would imagine that cities like Oceanside and even San Diego would have some degree of bleed effect onto that telescope. Whereas in Hawaii, you've got no true cities for hundreds of miles. I mean, obviously, arguably, you know, your capital cities and major cities of Hawaii will have some terrestrial light that will have a bleed effect, but I'm sure nowhere to the extreme of some of these other major cities in the U.S.
This is nothing like Los Angeles.
Yeah.
This has been your lesson in geography and astronomy.
That's right. I love both of those. I've taken multiple classes. But so, but yeah, like Brad says, hopefully proper actions were taken early on, and that the few that are pitching a fit are truly just a few. So.
It's definitely a dual-sided argument where you have to look at two different places and the whole back event of it just to get the picture to even comment on this. It's...
Yep. So I'm going to try to see if I can do some follow-up on it and see if I can dig up more information for next week and see if we can come up with a little more in-depth.
Sounds good. So, speaking of pitching a fit...
Uh-oh.
Lock and load, people.
That's it. Seatbelts on, because it's time for me to pitch a fit. So, did you know that there was copy protection in printer ink?
What, like you can't clone it, or...
So,
because I'm pretty sure we're not allowed to clone much of anything these days.
Well, sure, but so I ran into this today with our printer. We have a HP printer, and HP has been putting specialized encrypted chips in their ink cartridges to try and prevent you from buying knockoff ink. You know, you can usually get the cheaper off-brand, like the store brand laser toner or ink cartridges or whatever.
Sure. Yep.
We covered this probably a few months ago with the intellectual property fight over Keurig and the K-Cups.
Yes.
Well, it turns out that the printer manufacturers, some of them at least, are doing the same thing with their ink cartridges. So that they can try and knock off the market for, you know, off-brand ink. Where this reared its...
So what you're saying is that these major companies are trying to knock off the knockoffs?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, cool.
All right.
Yep, so you're with me so far.
Yep.
So where this becomes a problem is when it doesn't work. Now, we've experienced this with other forms of DRM, like when the... when Diablo launched and the servers weren't ready, or when Destiny launched and there weren't enough servers, things like that, right?
Sure.
So it's never much of a problem until it doesn't work right, and then the only people that get hurt are the legitimate users. So where we ran into this today with our ink is... the ink started running dry. My wife was doing some printing and, you know, the black ink started to run out. So she asked if I would kindly change the ink cartridge. Not a problem. So I grabbed the spare, authentic, genuine HP ink out of the cupboard, tore the brand new package open, pulled the, you know, pulled this protective tape off.
Put it into a glass, swirled it around, smelled it and said, yes, that is good.
That's right. This is a good vintage. Let's use it. I slid it into the printer, locked the printer carriage, at which point it reported, this is not a genuine HP cartridge. Replace.
I'd first of all like to applaud you for the very thorough step-by-step visualization from getting from cupboard back to printer. I mean, I felt like I was there. I mean, I really did.
I'm glad. I was going for those visuals.
That's kind of why I had to go with that glass thing. I was like, all right, it's a wine now.
Well, I have seen some reports where printer ink costs more ounce by ounce than a fine champagne. So.
I don't doubt that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at what an ink cartridge costs. $25, $30, $40 for a cartridge, and you get, what, maybe an ounce of toner?
Yep.
Versus $45 fills up your car with gas.
So my problem here is where they're overreaching of trying to protect the little stuff, the stupid stuff, starts to become a problem with the consumer. So here I have a $30 ink cartridge that now I have to follow up this whole chain of calling HP for support for ink. Because it's fresh out of the box, and the printer says, nope, that's not good enough.
Well, it's interesting.
Now, I know it's not the printer. I know it's not the printer, because if I put the old cartridge back in, it recognizes it and starts working fine.
It's interesting you claim is ink is the stupid and small stuff, but you know, it's the recurring transaction for things like ink that's where the money's at for a lot of these companies.
That's what
absolutely.
We look at the big items like the printers and be like, wow, that's $100. Okay, oof. Well, if you buy 2 or 3 ink cartridges, you've bought another printer.
Yep. Absolutely.
And you know, when you've got black and color and all those different subcategories, I mean, that's the profitability right there.
Oh no, and that's a known thing. They definitely, it has been known that at least some of the budget models, they sell the printer at a loss, knowing they will make up the money on the ink.
Yep.
But my point is, you know, when the protection goes so far as to prevent you from using the legitimate item, it's not like we're even using off-brand ink. We're using the legitimate ink, and it's still refusing to work.
So what was your solution?
Well, right now we're running, you know, what little we can, squeezing what little we can out of the old cartridge. We have to buy another one to get by, and I'm going to have to call HP and try and get support for an ink cartridge.
I was going to say, if it's brand new, never open, can you get them to, you know, compensate for it? I mean, you bought a brand new deal. Yeah, you may have had it in your shelf for a while, but it was never used, never opened. And I'm assuming there's no expiration date printed on the package.
Not that I've seen.
And yet, you know, you go to use it and it doesn't work.
It's disturbing.
Yep, I agree.
So hopefully HP will make good on it. But, you know, when your protection schemes, and I know we've talked about this before ad nauseum, but when your protection schemes go so far as to prevent your lawful paying customers from using your products legitimately, then you've gone too far.
Yeah. I mean, I get their model for trying to make sure you buy their ink versus you know, a knockoff brand. I get it. I understand. If I were them, I'd probably do the same thing. Look, we know that's where our money is. We want to make sure people are buying our stuff. But yeah, if it's got a shelf life and it decides that after 6 months it's not going to work anymore, whether it's, you know, still in the packaging, that's a problem.
And some companies have been known to put that in their chips. That if it sits too long, they just expire it.
Nice.
That seems like a massive amount of, like, wasted ink product. It's like, you think they could be like, oh yeah, just send it back and then pour the ink into another cartridge and package up and send it back out.
Then you start incurring shipping costs for something that I've already paid for.
I think Wade's statement of over-engineering for something that might be so simple, but you've got to try to keep people buying your stuff and not someone else's, so...
I mean, it's this. I'm trying to. I'm loosely based this within gaming is that we've had to deal that with. What's it called? DRM. And why people pirate things. It's just build a decent service. I mean, people pirate games for the reason is that they couldn't get it any legitimate way. It's. You know, if you created an easy way to get the product that didn't screw you over, you would find that people would be most happy to pay it.
Yep.
No argument here. Well, I mean, I'm tapped out for tonight, Brad, unless you've got another one you want to throw in there to get us going. Otherwise, we can call it an evening.
I think that's a good place.
Yeah, I think we overused our times in the last couple podcasts. I think we need to give a buffer.
Pay it forward.
That's a fair statement. We have gone long, So this one we'll cut a few minutes short. Thank you all for listening, and we will catch you next week.
Keep on gaming.
That's a wrap.